You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
Yes, indeed. We now have our weekly catch-up with Labor's Andrew Little. Mary Margaret asked him to outline more clearly what we can expect of police patrolling during lockdown, particularly in terms of sufficient dispersal across communities. Just to bear in mind, this audio is not the greatest. We're going to work out how we're going to do that better next week, and I'll try and outline the main points after the interview. She started by asking him how he felt during his first morning in Alert Level 4.
Oh, good, yeah, very quiet. I mean, I managed to get out for a quick bike ride.
Oh, good.
So we'll just start to build a bit of routine into these mysterious days ahead of us. So,
will you be working from home or going into Parliament?
No, working from home. No, we've got to do our bit in terms of restricting ourselves, so I've got some work to do, and I'll be in touch with the office throughout the day. So, and things will come up. There may be a need to go in from time to time, for things, but as much as possible, be working from home.
What does the next few weeks look like for you with your work? Is it all based around COVID, or will you keep working on things such as the voter suppression form that you were telling me about last week?
Yeah, none of that stuff goes away, and so there's paperwork associated with that. We also know we've got a general election still scheduled for the 19th of September. We've got referendums attached to that as well. We still have some work to do to get finalised in our preparation for the referendum, so particularly the cannabis one, so that work will continue. So, yeah, like it won't be all about COVID-19.
Okay, well, moving to COVID-19, I thought you'd be a great person to understand more about what dealing with non-compliance is going to look like. I was listening to Mike Bush on RNZ this morning, and he explained that the first consequence of non-compliance is a warning and the second may be arrest. How worried are you about the degree of non-compliance that there may be and the extent to which it might jeopardise our efforts?
You know, it's interesting, just in the last couple of days, particularly businesses saying they want to carry on trading through, not really getting that why we're doing what we're doing. We really, the way to stop community transmission is people just got to kind of literally stop in their tracks, stop in their homes. So that didn't give me a huge deal of confidence. That said, I think actually most New Zealanders know what is needed. Many have, they've adjusted and adapted well before midnight last night. Getting around this morning, in a 20-minute bike ride, I saw four vehicles. Two of them were trucks, doing work, delivering gas bottles. And then there were two vehicles, who they were. But people pretty much have got the message. And you need to. This is about stopping the spread of this virus, because it is out of control, as we've seen in other countries, easily gets out of control. So I have confidence that they will, but I think the police approach is the right one. These 30 days, people are just going to have to get used to, this is different, this is going to feel different. It's not like the Christmas holidays where you have time off and you get to do a whole heap of stuff. This is like the Christmas holidays and you get to do nothing. You've got to stick at home. So I think the police will take the right approach. But if people are going to be deliberately defiant, then, they're putting all of us at risk. And so they have to be a response to that.
What will the dispersal of police patrol look like? Because in our day-to-day lives, police presence is noticeably unequal across regions and suburbs. But we know that non-compliance is highly likely in, for example, I live in a suburb and I've already heard plans of non-compliance. Is this a dispersal of police presence going to change for the enforcement of lockdown?
I think they are tasked with, getting out and about across all communities. And I agree with you. I think there'll be some reasonably comfortable communities who think that they're kind of above it, that they're okay, that they can do what they like. I think one of the critical things too is, as people still adjust to, whether or not they've got enough stuff at home or food and stuff, people still panic buying at supermarkets and the like. So I know that I was down at the supermarket last night. There were police there. There's nothing going wrong, but they were just keeping a presence there, checking things out. And I think you'll see a lot of that. I think they'll be checking on in shopping precincts and things to check who's trading and if it's justified for them to do so. They'll be out and about, and they'll, I think where if they see kind of high traffic areas, I think you can expect that cars will be stopped and people just ask what they're doing and where they're going, and from maybe at home type of thing. I think that's what we'll see for the next few days at least.
Now, I wondered if you could help us with a clarification on how casual employees are affected by the wage subsidy. I found in the fact sheet that casual employees do qualify, but I had to send that to my boss to make that process begin. It didn't happen automatically. And then I found on Twitter some people have been saying that their bosses have told them that their hours are too few to qualify. Is that is that valid, or is there something going wrong there?
I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure there was an hours limit on it. Basically, an employer applies for a subsidy based on the staff complement that they say they're going to try and they want to keep on board, and that could include casual employees. I mean, strictly speaking, the nature of casual employment is it is kind of day to day. You no guarantee of ongoing employment. That's it. If an employer is applying for a subsidy on the basis that your particular role, casual or otherwise, is going to be kept on and subsidised, then they should keep you on, and you should be getting those hours, or at least 80% of those hours, maintained.
The last time that we talked, we weren't even on alert level 2 yet, but I did ask what COVID-19 response looks like inside prison. Now that we're at level 4, what does lockdown look like inside prisons?
Look, I know the Kelvin Davis is the Corrections Minister is across this, and I think the big worry for the prisons is, you know, a whole bunch of people in a confined space, even if they've got different cells, but with a, you know, with a double banking or there's more than one prisoner to a cell, that, you know, that's a high risk sort of thing. So the prisons will be doing everything they can to keep the virus out. That will mean restrictions on visiting, particularly family visitors, and so they'll have to make sure that there's alternatives such as, you know, easy access to phone calls and what have you. Lawyers obviously need to continue to be able to visit their clients. And the courts will continue to operate throughout the 4 weeks. So somebody who's been arrested and is due to have their first appearance, they've got to be able to instruct a solicitor, so solicitors have to have access to people. Well, I think the prisons will be, I think they'll be staggering meal times so that they're not having so many people in the dining room at one time and taking those precautions. And a lot of keeping services clean and those sorts of things.
To finish, I wondered if you wanted to let us know what your own response was when you woke up this morning, waking up to the reality of such an enormity of what this enforcement is. What do you have to say about it to the listeners?
This is unprecedented. Nothing like this has ever happened in living memory. And you know, even though my parents who lived through the war, and many of us have grandparents and great-grandparents who've been through, you know, the Depression and wars and things like that. But this is completely different again, because this is right on our own homes. We're doing something in our own homes, streets, neighbourhoods, cities, towns, the country, that is about dealing with this. And look, we can't even see these things. It's a mysterious thing, you know. It feels kind of weird, but... And it will feel weird too, because I think the novelty will wear off after a few days, and we've got to get through 4 weeks of this. So the main thing is, you know, stay in contact by phone and other means to people, holler across the street. We've got to maintain that sort of contact. We've got to look after our own mental health and look out for each other. This is totally about selflessness. It's not about us anymore. It's about everybody else other than us. And I put a Facebook post up last night saying, the biggest act of love that we can show for our families, our friends, our neighbours, our communities, our cities and our countries is to stay home and knock this thing out once and for all. We have to do it for everybody and for all of us and for our future.
That was Mary Margaret Slack speaking to Minister Andrew Little. And I just want to cover off some of those main points. Mary Margaret sent these to me actually during the show. Well done, everybody. We're working together. I love this. Okay, so Mary Margaret started by asking how he felt during his first morning, and he actually gone for a bike ride. Didn't know that Andrew Little rides bikes for fun. That's a cool little fact. And he wants to start building a new routine for what he called the mysterious days ahead. He said he'd be working from home as much as possible, but sometimes go into the office, and when asked if if his mahi during the rahui would be centred around COVID-19 completely. He said none of his usual ministerial duties go away, so he'll still be working on bills aimed at reforming issues such as cannabis and voter suppression, which he discussed on our show last week. And just, I guess, a note to remember that currently the election is still going ahead in September this year at this point in time, and that means those referendums, one of which is a cannabis referendum, is going ahead. In terms of COVID-19, and our rahui, Mary Margaret asked the minister if he was worried about how much non-compliance may occur and the extent to which it might jeopardise our efforts. He acknowledged there was some lack of acceptance or understanding for what needed to be done, but that he had faith that most New Zealanders know what they need to do and understand why they have to do it. Mary Margaret's key concern was that the dispersal of patrol might, what the dispersal of patrol might look like, she raised with the minister that in day-to-day life, police presence is noticeably unequal across regions and suburbs, and asked if this will change for the enforcement of lockdown. He acknowledged this to be true and said that police are tasked with getting out across all communities. He reminded Mary Margaret that there will likely be an adjustment period for the first few days, but that we can expect high traffic areas will lead to stopping and questioning. The minister also admitted that he was a bit worried about prisoners during lockdown, but that everything was being done to keep the virus out of prisons. He said cleaning requirements were being ramped up. Restrictions would centre around staggered dining and increasing phone contact, so visiting hours can stop. He reminded Mary Margaret that courts will remain open and explained that because of this, lawyers will be able to visit their clients. And to finish, he reiterated that staying at home was an essential act of aroha.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.